This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2016, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 5.
Anyway, this is biblical integration in the elementary subjects. We know that the Bible is important. We know it's an important book, and we know that it's supposed to impact all parts of our lives, and I think we believe that our lives shouldn't be divided into this sort of secular section and religious section. We want our students to be excited about studying the Bible. And there's different things that people have tried to make that kind of be real for students. Sometimes one curriculum that I taught for a while, they had a Bible verse, and for every test, they had to memorize a Bible verse. Which meant that in math, sometimes they got 100% on the part that their math came out of, and then they got one wrong because they had misspelled the Bible memory verse. And I didn't really see the students getting excited about the Bible over that, for sure. wasn't my favorite way of doing it anyway. And it didn't really seem to give them any sort of excitement. I'm sure they learned a few Bible verses. Our curriculum sometimes has, various Bible things in it, and I think that can be good. I haven't very often seen the students get really excited about something from the Bible that they studied just simply because it happened to be on a little sidebar in their book. It was a good way to make a connection, perhaps, but I'm not going to say never, because I think there are times they got kind of excited about something like that. But I have found that students really do like to make kind of their own, like, outside connections. If you've ever, been working at Bible Memory and a student came in on Monday morning and said, the preacher read our Bible Memory in church on Sunday, and they're, really excited about that connection. Or, you might be studying something in science. Maybe you're studying the stars, which you can't look at during the day, and they come back the next day and say, well, we saw that last night. And they get really excited about making those connections about what they're learning in school to the rest of their life. And I think that's they're quicker to come to school and act really excited about it when they're in first or second grade. As time goes on, they're probably not quite as exuberant about it as they get older. But I have fifth grade, and I still have students who come in sometimes and are like, oh, we did this or that. And, they knew it connected to something that we were learning. So I guess I'd like to suggest that connecting the Bible to their other subjects is sometimes just as effective, not because you planned something elaborate or because you put a huge amount of thought or preparation into it, but simply because you take those little moments that come. And to be honest, a lot of the suggestions I'm going to give, or examples I'm going to give is maybe a better way to put it, do not come out of something that I spent a lot of time planning or something that I really thought about a lot. It was simply spur of the moment. I maybe even didn't think about it when I did my planning. It was something that I thought about right in the middle of class. We're studying something and suddenly I'm like, hey, and maybe refer to something we talked about in Bible class or a story I remembered. Like, who knows where there was a person that was left-handed in the Bible. And that example is actually in my notes. And that had been something we were studying, so they did know who I was referring to. That was actually more of a review. But bringing those things up in a way that they sense that you're excited about it, and also that tells them that the Bible is important to you, you know the Bible, you make the connections, you help them make the connections, and I think they get more excited about it in that time, most of the time, than what they do if there's a little blurb in your books already, or something they need to memorize, or those things are good. It gives them some knowledge about it, but I don't think it usually gives them a lot of excitement about it. I do the same thing between other subjects. If something in science connects to something in math or whatever, to make those connections, students like to make connections. So if you can get them excited about making those connections, I think you can get them excited about the Bible in that way. And it doesn't need to take a lot of time. It doesn't need to take a lot of time out of your class either, especially sometimes it's just simply a half a minute mention of something and helping them make that connection. The other thing is, if you start making connections and you find your students making connections, make sure that you show no lack of excitement over the connections that they make without your help. You should, really show them that you are excited that they are doing that on their own. I'm going to go through a bunch of different subjects, and your notes in front of you are very similar to what I have. I have a few more details in mine. You can write in a few more if you want them. My idea behind this is not so much, your curriculum is not going to be the same as mine, probably. You maybe don't teach the same class. You might be able to take some of my suggestions and take them just as they are and use them. But probably a lot of them you can't, because you teach different subjects, the subject areas are different. I teach old world history. You might teach new world history, or maybe you don't teach history at all. Or, you're going to have to take that. But the whole idea that I had in doing this is so that you can get some ideas of what this can look like, and you can think through. I think if you're aware of it, you can start to get your own ideas as you go throughout the year. And you might not be able to sit down before the year starts and make a list. You might not have any idea. If you're a new teacher, you really probably have no idea. But hopefully, if you're thinking about it, you kind of have it there that you want to do this and that this is important. As you go throughout the year, when that moment arrives, you can stop and take the 30 seconds and help them make that connection. So I made notes all throughout my past school year of a bunch of different things that came up to me, things that I mentioned to them. A few of these I haven't gotten to use. I thought about them after class was over, and I didn't have a chance to go back and actually make use of it. So hopefully this year I can use a few more of them. I'm going to start with history. I teach old world history, and that kind of shows up in my examples. I will also make a comment, I teach Old Testament as well. That's our Bible in fifth grade. I teach Old Testament, about the first half of the Old Testament. They finish the second half of the Old Testament in sixth grade. So that's a little where I'm coming from, and I did think about it as I was about done with this, that more of my examples, I think, come from the Old Testament because that's what's in my mind. So your examples might be from the New Testament. It might be from a different section of history. Probably the most exciting connections I made this year were with ancient Egypt and connecting what we did both in story time and in our history study of ancient Egypt and in our Bible study of ancient Egypt. It all coordinated very well. God, I think, worked the timing out because it certainly wasn't me. And our Bible curriculum and our history curriculum are all from different places, and it just all kind of like fit together. The story time book I picked up, I don't even know if I looked ahead at what was coming. It was my first year in fifth grade this past year, so with those curriculums. So I just kind of picked it up, and I'm not sure if I even really planned it, but it all like fit together just perfectly. So I have a few examples throughout that came out of that, which was one of my more exciting parts of my year. Egypt. You teach your students about the Nile River. Probably if you learn any amount of geography, you learn a little bit about world geography. You'll probably learn about the Nile River. If you talk at all about its importance, take a little time to discuss the effects of what happened when that Nile River was turned, that river that was so important to them, what happened when that river was turned into blood in the time of Moses. I'm going to hit a little bit on ancient Egypt a few times throughout, but I think I'll leave that one behind. Ancient Greece. Connect it to the stories of Paul. Look up the locations of the places that are mentioned in Acts. In our history, we studied about the stadium, the gymnasium, the marketplace, some of those places. Would Christians have gone to those places? Which of those places would have they gone to? Why or why not? When we talked about ancient Rome, we talked about the Roman citizens wearing togas. Was Paul allowed to wear one? He was a Roman citizen. Did he? Well, I don't know that we know for sure, but we do know that at one point they didn't realize he was a Roman citizen, which made me think that he mustn't have. Of course, that's an assumption, but help them, those are things that you can bring up and discuss and think through with them. In ancient Rome, we learn about the Appian Way. It mentions it in the Bible. It has a little different name, but Acts 8, on Paul's journey to Rome, says the brothers came to meet them as far as Appia Forum. that's what it's speaking of. I'm not actually sure. I looked it up earlier, and I'm kind of forgetting right now if that's a specific place on Appian Way. I forget exactly. But it was mentioned there. And also the use of dates. I did not have a dateline. As I said, it was my first year in fifth grade this year. I did not get a timeline on my wall. And it bothered me all year, but I just didn't have time to get it done. So hopefully this year I can get one up. But if you can mark some of those times that you learn in Bible class and mark some of the times that you learn in history class. Now, if you do New World History or more recent history and you study Bible from the first beginning of the Old Testament, it might not overlap a whole lot. But they're still familiar with other Bible stories. If you do history that goes back that far, have some form of timeline. Even if you don't have a lot on it, at least something that you can point out to them. And maybe as you're on your way, throughout the year, you'll realize like, oh, I don't really have anything posted from Bible in this section of history, but they would overlap. Well, look it up. Find a few. Maybe you can look it up in class. Every school has different things, but we have internet at school, and there are times where if I have a few minutes in class and students are asking questions about it, or I suddenly am wondering and I didn't think, never occurred to me ahead of time to look it up, I say, well, we have 2 minutes. Let me get my computer. I'll quickly check. And the students kind of, I don't do it really often, so they kind of get a kick out of me checking it out right there when they're watching. Not that I have the computer turned where they can really watch, but pull it out. And I think maybe along with that is the fact that they realize that you're still learning too. They recognize too that if I look something up, it's a little new to me, and I'm usually a little kind of excited about it then if it's something I didn't actually know before. And kind of along with these different things, how did the other civilizations compare to the Middle Eastern culture? So sometimes the events in the Middle Eastern culture. So you might be studying China or whatever, some other area. But how did that connect? Like, what was happening in Bible times compared to that? You know what? I just realized there was one comment I was going to make before I get started. Sometimes when I make these connections, I make them in other classes. We're having history class. I connect it to something from Bible, maybe something from Bible class or maybe some other part of the Bible. But then there is also the flip side of it. When you are in Bible class, make connections to the other classes as well. So that the connections kind of go two ways. And some of these subjects, I think, happen better in that subject, and some of them sometimes happen better in Bible class. Math is actually one that I would prefer to make the connection in Bible class to math, usually, than math to Bible class. And maybe my examples will explain that when I get there. Current events. Now, unless you have a current events class, which most lower elementary classes don't, the only way you can make any of these connections is if you include current events in your class somehow. You probably won't do that unless your school gets some sort of publication or you keep up on the news. So, and obviously with their age, kind of varies on exactly what you're going to bring to class. So sometimes current events are the events in the news, but sometimes they can be connected. Okay, I guess the example I'm thinking of is one of our sixth graders. He wasn't in my class, but his sister was in my class. Traveled along with his dad to Greece when they went to help the refugees. I'm not sure that many children got the opportunity to go along. I don't know if they would accept any going now anymore anyway. There's some risk involved with it, so I'm not sure how it worked out that they were allowed to take a sixth grader with them. But they did. And so the students were kind of interested about what was going on over there because they were in fifth grade and they had a sixth grader who went there. So thus, the refugee situation came up and we discussed it some. I have a little bit of current events that's sort of mandated in my curriculum, but not a whole lot. So I just sort of brought it up anyway. And then I could use those opportunities to connect to some things in the Bible. You could have the discussion the refugee situation is not one that's going away. So that's definitely one that can be brought up at any age level, I think. I think it's something that children should be made aware of. Obviously, they probably, depending on their age, you're not going to give them so many details or so much of the, maybe details of the awful part of it. And yet the Bible talks about us caring for foreigners. Children of any age enjoy raising money to help someone. If you're in a situation where maybe your church is assigned to has a family assigned to them that they're helping, or you know of someone who is, if you can make connections in that way. And by the way, a lot of areas, in Lancaster, I know this is true. I'm not sure of other areas, but there are other areas. I just don't know where. There are agencies around who are helping refugee families, and even if you're not assigned to one, you may be able to, if you do a little homework, make connections that your class would be able to somehow encourage somebody. That, of course, takes a little more work on your part. But there are things that you can do, especially if you see that your class is kind of getting excited about this, or maybe one of them, maybe your students come from different churches and you find out that one of the churches, maybe not even your own church, is helping someone. And, you know, if you could send them welcome cards or do anything small that your students would enjoy, that's one way to make some connections with them and what we're taught. Another interesting thing that I realized, I suddenly got curious, you know, Paul traveled through Greece. So where did he travel? He traveled, the Bible mentions, I think once, that Paul traveled through the city, and I forgot to look up the pronunciation, Mytilene, I think is what it looks like. It's the city on Lesbos, which is the island that a lot of refugee organizations have been working on to help. It's the one island that's very close to Turkey, and a lot of the refugees are coming across there and traveling right through. Paul traveled through there. Now, the Bible doesn't say much about it. It just basically mentions that they stopped there and continued on their way. But if you talk about any of Paul's missionary journeys, if your students are familiar with that at all, yeah, it's a little interesting, kind of connects those two worlds. We hear a lot about modern-day slavery. Once again, the very younger students, you have to be a little careful about how you go about discussing that with them. But I don't think that's an issue that's going away very quickly either. So the Bible talks about slavery a bit too. You know, how can you connect those things? Or, you know, there are stories in the Bible about people who are slaves. Sometimes students assume there are no slaves today. Well, that's not exactly true. So, helping them make some of that. If you study anything about Abraham and that section of the Old Testament, take a little time and talk about the conflict in the Middle East. You know, I don't keep up on politics enough to do a really good explanation for my students, but, you know, I spent a bit of time doing a little research and came up with a few basics for them, and at the end they were just kind of like, everybody's just kind of fighting everybody. I said, yeah, that's kind of the way it is. I mean, that's kind of where I came out too. But it goes back to things that we hear about, that we know about in the Bible. And like, do they know that these things have gone on? You know, more so in some generations than others. Of course, it kind of ebbs and flows, but it's been there. It's been there for years, and it does connect to stories that they know really well. So, it's interesting for them to get that. And then there's the little things. We know the story about Moses being commanded to put a serpent on a pole when they were in the wilderness. We see a pole with a serpent on it. I don't remember did I put the answer in your notes? Do you know where that is? Where do we see the serpent with? If it's in there, then it's just a giveaway. But every time you see an ambulance go by, there's a pole with a serpent on it. If you do research, they won't. I don't think they'll like really admit to where it comes from. I'm not sure if there's any direct ties. Seems a little odd to me that it wouldn't, that they'd come up with that somewhere else and not be connected to Moses. So I'm not sure that all people agree that that's what the origin is, but personally, I kind of feel like it has to have some sort of connection. Place of healing. Even little children like that one. If you learn that story in about Moses in Bible class, I think my first graders thought that was pretty cool. Literature and reading. I have some examples here. Some are more general, some specific. But this one, I mean, you know, everyone's literature and reading is different probably. So you might have to come up with your own. So some of these I tried to make basic enough that you can kind of just get ideas from it. If you teach first grade, I did for 2 years, and actually one of my favorite parts of teaching first grade was teaching them to read, because I love to read, and so that was kind of, yeah, love seeing them take off. I think all first graders should know that the most important reason they're learning to read is because they need to learn to read the Bible. I know that throughout first grade, they don't get good enough at reading in first grade to read a lot of the Bible. If you hand them a King James Bible half of the year, you'll probably get them a little discouraged. But there are verses. They don't have to read a whole lot until there are a few verses you can pick out here or there. And I didn't take time to write them down, any down. Maybe it's just a piece of a verse. Maybe it's just a sentence or a phrase from a verse that they're familiar with. But have it on the board when they come in the morning. At that age when they're like just realizing that I can read things that are other places, and they come in and they read it and they're like, I can read a Bible verse. And get them excited about that as soon as you can. I didn't spend a lot of time on that when I taught first grade, but I did come back to it occasionally. Something I think I could have done even more of than what I did. But yeah, they got excited about that. Figures of speech. Proverbs is a wonderful place to go for figures of speech. I think I have one or two in your notes. I have a few more. I'm going to read them for you. These give quite good word pictures in your mind. Proverbs 1:9, for they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck. 3:18, she is a tree of life to them that lay hold upon her, and happy is everyone that retaineth her. Sorry, I don't have the rest of the verses around them, so you can look them up if you want to know more context. 10:26, as vinegar to the teeth and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that send him. 11:22, as a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion. 14:30, a sound heart is the life of the flesh, but envy the rottenness of the bones. 20:17, bread of deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth shall be filled with gravel. 25:13, as the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refresheth the soul of his masters. 25:14, whoso boasteth himself of a false gift is like clouds and wind without rain. 25:19, confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a broken tooth and a foot out of joint. 25:25, as cold waters to a thirsty soul, so is good news from a far country. I had a sort of fleeting thought at one point about whether or not you could actually make an art lesson out of some of these verses, but I didn't really pursue that at all. I'm not sure. Some of these sound a little difficult to me, actually. But I don't teach art class, so I have nothing in here about art. But yeah, kind of as a side note, you definitely could get some interesting art lessons from the Bible as well. Find story time books. I always felt a little pushed with my reading time and with our reading class, and also with my history class. Time is always a problem. So I tried really hard this past year as at a fifth grade level to try to find storybooks for our story time that connected to usually history. And because my history overlapped with my timing of Bible on the timeline, I was able to actually use it for both some of the time. If you can find story time books that are set in ancient times, the places you will study in the Bible, that can give them a glimpse and, I don't know, help them to sort of get a picture of the culture that they don't maybe see when we read the story in the Bible. My favorite example of this, what happened to me this past year, was my use of the book called The Golden Goblet. It's not a Christian book. It was recommended to me by a friend who said, you need to read this to your fifth graders. And that's about, I read it myself quickly sometime before. I was like, yeah, I think they would like this. I think I made my brother, who was in sixth grade last year, read it just for fun. And I don't know, mark the words he didn't know so I would know what to do with them or something. Know how many words I needed to explain. it was a little challenging. I'm not sure if some of my fifth graders could have picked it up and read it and enjoyed it, but it was even maybe a little higher level book than that. But it was set in ancient Egypt, and as I believe God had a plan, because I certainly couldn't have gotten the timing like this, we finished the book like the day before we started the section about Moses in Egypt in Bible class. And the students had gotten really excited about this book. It gave a pretty good picture of ancient culture. Like I said, it was not written from any sort of Christian perspective. The boy in the book believed in these gods in ancient Egypt, and he was very fearful of them. And yet the book has a good sense in where the boy really wanted to do right. He was trying, his brother was trying to get him to do something that was wrong, and so he was trying to get out of that somehow. And anyway, they got really excited about it, and it talked about the pyramids, and they went out to the Valley of the Kings, and it talked about the Nile River, and all these different things that we learned about both in history and in Bible class, and we read about it. Read the story time book and then got to it in Bible and soon after in history, I think. The timing was amazing. But they were so excited about what we learned in Bible class because they knew all this stuff from the book. And so when we studied the plagues of Egypt, there are people who have looked at the plagues and said they believe it matches to a lot of the Egyptian gods, and there's connections between that. Like, God wasn't just random in his choice of, like, oh, let's send frogs this time, let's send lice this time. Like, it actually connected to some of the gods that they had. They had a god, and I write enough information in front of me, a god of frogs, basically, and different. And this is what God was attacking. And we had this boy in the book was very afraid of some of those things. He was fearful of these gods throughout the book, and so they had already heard these names and they were familiar to them. That was a real highlight, and I think the students really made a lot of connections there. That's not going to be something spur of the moment. Hopefully you have times like that in your class that it works out for you just like that, even though you don't try it. Of course, this coming year, I will absolutely do it again, now that I found it. If you have some space to be allowed to read things or add things to history or Bible, there are also in the book called The Stories of Gods and Heroes. This is probably also more for the older students. It's interesting to make connections between the stories that the Greek culture had with our Bible stories. And the curriculum that I used for history taught the students first that the people who study all the different cultures and find that, like, there's a reoccurring story of the flood in many different cultures believe that that is proof, in a sense, that there was a flood sometimes, because so many different cultures have that story. And there's other things that are in the Bible, stories in the Bible as well. The biblical account of creation, a lot of stories, other culture stories of creation have interesting similarities to it. So if you use a book like Stories of Gods and Heroes, where you can read to them what other cultures have said about creation and make those connections, that can also be good, a good literature lesson, as well as making those connections to the Bible. And my students, I didn't read a lot to them out of the Stories of Gods and Heroes. They begged for it a lot more than what I ever had time to read it to them. If you read a story that is a literature story that is very old, that goes back, that the time of its writing goes back into Bible times, find out who was alive during that time. I think in history class we studied Homer, but we didn't actually, Homer and the Iliad, we didn't read his stuff. We just simply learned that he existed at a certain time. From the bit of research that I've found, he lives sometime in the same era as Solomon. And suddenly I was like, okay, that was a little further back than I realized. Like, that was kind of new to me as well. And like I mentioned right at the beginning, sometimes you make the little connections. story reading class, we opened our books up. The book was about a boy who was left-handed. Well, we had read a story about someone left-handed in Bible class just, I don't know, a couple weeks before. It was long enough that I sort of had to probe them a little bit if they knew the name and how that was an advantage to him. But Ehud was left-handed. Anyone know what advantage that was to him? Do any of you teach that story? He was able to pull his sword out and kill. You know what? I don't have it in front of me. No, I forget. Someone help me out. Who did he kill? Eglon. I think you're right. But his sword was on the wrong side because he was left-handed, so they looked at him and said, oh, he doesn't have one. Dagger, I forget which word the Bible uses. But he was able to pull it out and kill him. They didn't notice that he had anything on him because it was on the wrong side. Did it have a lot to do with the Bible, the story we were reading? No, but it only took like 30 seconds to mention it, and the students, yeah, like those connections. And I actually have one that I wrote down just yesterday. If any of you were in Dina's class in the afternoon, her long, I forget what they call them, are those workshops or work sessions, I always get the two mixed up, but the longer one in the afternoon about English, she read from the book Adam of the Road, which interestingly enough is actually a book I read to my students, but I had not thought through this connection before. She read a section of where they were in St. Paul's in London, and they came in to the marketplace and, no, they came into St. Paul's, which is a cathedral, but it was like a marketplace, and there were just people selling and yelling and doing all kinds of things. And as soon as I heard her say that, partly because I'm working at this class, I was like, yes, what Bible story is that like? They should make that connection. And Dina made the connection yesterday as well, very much like when Jesus walked into the marketplace and came through with his whip. Yeah, that's pretty much what I have as far as literature and reading. Like I said, every story is different, so you have to make your own connections with whatever you read. But if it's in your mind, I think you'll make it. And yeah, if you can get the students excited about making connections, that also goes a long way. Spelling and vocabulary. I don't know that any of these are something that I planned ahead or, you know, made an important part of my lesson. If you learn a new vocabulary word, sometimes when we learn a new vocabulary word, especially if it's a little more unusual word, the first thing that comes to my mind is a Bible verse I know it from, because maybe it's not even a part of my working vocabulary. So mention the Bible verse. If you don't know where it is and you have a moment, look it up. If not, just simply mention the part of it that you know. And see how many of the students are familiar with that verse. At a lower level, you might think of it sometimes. I'll say sometimes if it's a word that's very common, it's a little harder to think of those because it's just common. We learned the word lament as one of our words. So we stopped for a moment. I said, well, we learned what lament means. What do you think the word, why is the one book of the Bible called Lamentations? What do you think the book of Lamentations is about? And most fifth graders don't know much about Lamentations to start with. So, you know, they were able to think through what the meaning of Lamentations probably is because of the word lament, and they were right. And now when they see the word Lamentations, I think they're going to think of that. Maybe not all of them, but probably. The spelling that I used this year was a little different than some. We learned a lot about breaking words apart and learning all the little pieces. They call them morphographs. And so we learned about all these little pieces. So we learned the morphograph X. EX, out of. So I said, what does Exodus mean? They were able to make that connection. Why was Exodus given that name? Well, of course, because they were coming out of Egypt. Which other words do you know that have EX at the beginning? Well, of course, they right away think of exit because it sounds a lot the same. And they can make those connections. Another thing I like to do is if we're taking a spelling test, instead of making up your own sentence for some of them, use the Bible verse or something from a Bible story. And, you know, that you can just sort of throw in as you're going. All right, I'm going to move on to science. I think science feels like one of the more natural ways sometimes. And I just have a few different things that I go to sometimes. Obviously, if you're studying waterways and flooding and the effects of flooding, you can go to the flood. That one's pretty obvious. If you do any study of tsunamis and the power of water, I think that's something they can think about too when you look at the flood. We, at least when I look back to my childhood memories of the flood, I just always kind of envisioned, like, you know, heavy rain coming down, the water just kind of rises. And, you know, I don't think about what I know now of water and how powerful water is and how it moves and how it must have reshaped the earth when it came. I'm just remembering a student when I taught in Grenada who didn't, he kind of, yeah, he had a little bit too much of an ego, I guess. He didn't want to be, he didn't want to think that anything could, you know, conquer him, I guess. And we talked about tsunamis, and I tried to impress upon them the power of water. And he was not to be outdone. He was pretty sure he could outrun it. So, anyway. somehow, yeah, I think for students to start getting a little grip on, yeah, the power of water that's involved in the flood. If in science class you spend any time studying animals that are now extinct, look up some of those odd animals mentioned in Job. Are they the animals that are now extinct? It kind of seems so sometimes. There's some mention of animals. Trying to remember, I think it's in Job that the unicorn is mentioned. Also something mentioned that appears like it was probably a dinosaur, although he doesn't maybe give enough for us to be sure. Study of the planets. Planets are mentioned in Acts 14, as well as some other places. Trying to think. Constellations are mentioned in Job, I think. If you do any study of reflections, do you remember the story? 2 Kings 3 is where you find it, where the sun set, God had them dig holes in the ground, and they dug holes, and the water filled them up, and when the sunset came, it shone on them, and sunset or sunrise, I don't know if it was feeling like it happened in the morning, but the enemy came over and looked down in the valley, and they were like, look, it's full of blood, because they saw the reflection of the sun, and came down, and yeah, they won the battle because of that. You know, making connections to that. They probably have seen the same thing happen, maybe not in a puddle, but they might know what it's like to look across the field and see a house that the sunset is shining in. They think the house is on fire. It looks like the windows are all lit up. Same kind of thing. If you learn about rotation, the revolution of the earth, talk about those times in the Bible where the sun stood still. Precipitation. There's some interesting stories involving precipitation. Some of these connect maybe more with the younger students. Joshua 10. They were fighting against the Amorites, and God sent hail. I think the Bible first calls it stones and later calls it hailstones. But he sent hail to the point that more people died from the hail than from Joshua and his men fighting against them. I've never seen any hail that would do that, but you know, maybe some of you have experienced hailstorms that would have been dangerous to that point. I don't think I've ever, never been any hailstorms in my area, aside from maybe taking out some car windows or something. Snow is mentioned in Job in different ways. Rain. We all know the story of Elijah and how he sat out and watched, and the tiny cloud came up and it got bigger, and suddenly it was there as a big storm and caused a flood, and he ran through it. And another interesting thing with rain is the study of the how God watered the earth up until the flood, and how it didn't rain before the flood, how he watered the earth with dew. a lot of younger students aren't really aware of that. You know, when we hear the story about the flood and we hear of the rain falling, I don't remember as a child that I knew. I mean, I'm sure I was told, but I don't think it ever really was impressed upon me very much. It didn't really seem to connect that much, that the water also came up from the deep, because that was kind of a new one to me, I think, as I got older to realize that. But that is part of it. But also, the other thing I never realized when I was younger was that it had never rained before then. So the very presence of rain automatically told them that something was going on. It wasn't just scary because it was a bad storm that came. It was immediately would have caused fear in their hearts because of the fact that it had never rained before, which is, of course, hard for us to imagine, and very hard for the students to imagine because they are so used to rain. But yeah, making connections with that. I think you can use your creative writing and essay writing to connect to the Bible as well. I have to say that I haven't done a whole lot of it, so I have a few examples. I think you could really go places with it. One thing that I ended up using actually I was kind of told to do it as I arrived. My Bible curriculum does not give very many grades. We have about 6 tests throughout the year. We use Rod and Staff Bible, and we have about 6 tests throughout the year, and that's supposed to be their grade. And so that means that in some quarters they have like 1 test grade, and that's where their grade is supposed to come from. That seems a little unfair. So in order to kind of alleviate that situation, as well as giving them a chance to make some other grades to kind of balance things out a bit, and also wanting to give some opportunity to give them some other writing assignments. We have some writing assignments that we kind of have stuck into our curriculum. Responses to Bible stories, which I grade them on pretty easily. I'm more interested in seeing them being able to think through what we've learned and to make some of those applications themselves. Actions of Bible characters, or looking at that kind of, this all depends a lot on which age level you are at. If you're a little higher age level, when they're getting to the point of they're starting to write persuasive things, like persuasive paragraphs and stuff, you know, give them a chance to actually prove a point with Bible verses. That obviously is more at the upper end. And one that my students were like, what? When I first gave them this assignment. I think this was one that came from the teacher before me, and it was a good one. But have them write the Bible story that they all know. Have them write it from a different point of view. Instead of just like telling the story of Noah and the ark, they need to write the story as if they were Noah. Or maybe they have to tell the story as if they were a neighbor. They didn't get in the ark. Or maybe they're an animal. Maybe they're one of Noah's sons or daughters. Or maybe they're the ark. Have them write it from the point of view of the ark itself. I kind of think I made my students toss a die and take whatever they got. I can't remember exactly how we did it when we got there, because I wanted them to actually kind of have this like smattering, but you could have them choose. And that kind of idea, I mean, you can do that with any Bible story. So take the Bible story you're learning in Bible class and have them rewrite it for creative writing. And that can be a bit of review. It can be a little insight, too, of how much they're catching from the Bible story. Math. Math is the subject that I'm more likely to actually, I think, like I said before, I'm a little more likely to actually do math things in Bible than to do Bible things in math class. Mostly just because that's what I found easiest to do. It comes more naturally. As we're reading a Bible story, when I see any sort of numbers in there, especially numbers that they're not likely to understand or quite know where I'm going with it, maybe they don't know, they can't picture how much this is talking about, then I will stop, figure out some numbers. Here's one of my favorites. I don't even remember when I first stopped and figured this out myself, but I know that I never had any idea what the numbers were behind this. And I don't think I put the answer on your paper for this. How much quail did they collect in the wilderness? In Numbers 10, they complained about the manna, and God sent quail. The Bible said it was 10 homers. how much is 10 homers? Have any of you ever looked that up? You have. If you've looked it up, then you know, you have some idea of how amazing it is. I don't know what I pictured before, but I had no idea how much it really is. I looked it up. Once again, if you have internet, and actually a lot of these conversions, like if you have any sort of Bible resource, they'll be in the back somewhere. You can figure them out pretty easily. One homer equals 59 gallons. So, I assume you're all teachers, you can do your math. 10 homers equals 590 gallons. And what I didn't put in your notes either is the Bible says this is the amount that the very least that someone collected. So the person who collected the smallest amount collected 590 gallons of quail. When I lived in Grenada, we frequently used a 5-gallon bucket for things. So I went ahead and figured out with them how many 5-gallon buckets is this. You know, if there's some, you live in the area of farming and they often use a certain size of something, like figure out how much, you know, make those connections for them too as well. It was 118 5-gallon buckets full. The Bible also tells us that they got sick and that they ate it until the quail came out their nose. I do not know if that's literal or figurative, but my family's had we've had a few discussions about, I don't know, whether or not that really honestly did happen or if he was just kind of using it as figurative speech. I don't know. The students were quite amazed by that, and I was equally amazed by that when I figured it out for the first time. That story becomes something entirely new when you do a little math with it than what it was before. If you study the beginning of the Bible is probably a little easier to do this, or maybe more amazing, but other sections are as well. If you use a timeline, you can practice adding, subtracting with your number line. How many years after Adam died was Noah born? I don't actually have my number written down here, but it's not that long. It's not very long in between, despite the fact that from the time Adam was born until Noah died was like roughly 2,000 years. But the time in between wasn't that long because they both lived that long. And so, even for them to see the timeline of that beginning section of the Bible, I mean, even for me, that's just, it's just mind-boggling. We can't imagine living for as long as what they did. And when they start realizing how long that time span was, it's not only a good Bible lesson, but it's also a really good chance for them to like compare numbers and see things. You know, they think of the time that Jesus was born as being, I mean, really long ago. But when they read the Bible, they never think about it that the flood back to creation was a similar period of time. Because in the Bible, it's just a couple chapters. It's only like 4 or 5 stories later in their Bible storybook. So they think that was close. And it was in generations, but not in time. So that's a really good opportunity for them to look at a timeline and find the dimensions of the ark. That's a pretty easy one if your students are just learning to multiply and basically, you would probably use multiplication for it, especially if you're multiplying with decimals or fractions, because that's kind of what it comes out to, because a cubit is about, well, you can use it however you want to. You can change it into 18 inches, or you can use it as a foot and a half. You can use it as 1.5 or as 1.5 or, you know, whatever fits best with where you're at. Or maybe you're saying, well, my students don't know how to do that yet. Do the math up on the board where they can see it. They might not be ready to do it, but they still kind of, I don't know, the first graders kind of liked when I got up there and did big things that they didn't know how to do, and that kind of guy kind of liked watching me do that stuff at times. And if you have a chance to go outside, if your school area is big enough that you can go outside and measure it off, especially for students that are a little older, get a real idea of how big the ark was. Of course, today, some of them may have traveled to, is it in Kentucky, where the new ark is? Maybe some of them will have their own stories of it. But probably the whole class hasn't gone there. So get them outside, measure it off. find the height. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead of myself. The tabernacle. There's a lot of little math things you can do with the tabernacle. The Bible gives lots of descriptions of how big it was. I don't have numbers in here. You can look it up. There, too, I think they would have to transfer it into there, I think, too. They give everything, I think it was mostly in cubits. So you'd have to do the same transfer as what you did before. And by the way, if they're just learning decimals and fractions, it's a pretty easy one to start with, because 1.5 is pretty easy. Those are easy numbers to work with. So you can find the area of the curtains. The curtain between the holy place and the Holy of Holies was 10 layers of fabric. So how much fabric did they need for that? You can figure that out when you get the find the area of 1 and have them practice multiplying by 10, which for some reason my students, I have a number of them who just, the multiplying by 10 thing, it seemed it didn't matter how often we came back to it, they just always forgot that it should be really easy. And they tried to do a bunch of work. So I was really happy when I could stick another multiplying by 10 thing in somewhere, because that was something they, I don't know how that one passed over them, but it seemed to sometimes. Find the height of Goliath. In our classroom, I didn't measure here. In our classroom, you can't quite see because his head would have went up through the ceiling just a little bit. But a lot of classrooms, you'd be somewhere up around the ceiling. And suddenly they go like, whoa, he was really that tall. I've been talking about measurement conversions, but there's all kinds of measurement conversions through the Bible. So that, to me, is one thing. And that's where I think I find it easier to do math in Bible class. We're studying a Bible story. Let's stop and figure it out while we're there. Occasionally in math class, I can look at it and say, hey, let's figure something out from the Bible. But to me, that didn't come naturally. Maybe you'll find otherwise. Another slant, which I was talking to my brother-in-law just last week, and he was wondering what I have to say about math because he teaches some math, and I told him what I had, and his thoughts kind of went in a little different direction. And maybe this is because he teaches older students, but I think it applies to all levels. You know how often students are kind of like, when are we ever going to use this about math class? Can really be that way sometimes, or it feels that way to them. At lower levels, it's pretty easy to come up with examples of how they're going to use it, actually. But it is true with math that just like it is in Bible, that we learn math concepts. We spend a lot of time. They spend all this time adding and subtracting and doing all these different things, which feels a little bit like busy work to them sometimes, and they get tired of it. And unless the student really enjoys math, math can be hard sometimes. But we learn those math concepts so that we can apply them to life later. And there's just no way to be able to use the numbers if we don't know where the numbers are allowed to go and what they're allowed to do. The better you are at math, the better you are at figuring all these other things that your teachers. So you know all the things that math comes into play with later. If someone's not good at math, all the other things they might not be good at later on. We learn math so we can apply them to life. We look at the Bible in a lot the same way. We learn a lot of these concepts so we can turn around and apply them to life. And the Bible doesn't always spell out exactly how this is going to apply to your life. God leaves us to figure that out on our own sometimes. I mean, obviously he gives us direction, but at their level, you know, they learn from the Bible they're not supposed to steal. God does not spell out, do not take the candy bar at the grocery store. You know, they need to make that connection. And math is the same way. We do all kinds of word problems, and students sometimes get a little hung up on word problems. So we try to give them some examples, but really the test is going to come later when they have to do it at home. So I would say there, too, if a student comes in with a math concept that they've learned to apply, I would definitely applaud them. That's sort of a side note. One small thing that I'm not sure, this is not a subject, is something that I enjoy doing, and I did it a lot in history class, and that is to do things with food. Students like getting food. They like tasting things. And okay, I brought a few things in that they didn't really appreciate. But our Bible lesson had a little snippet thing about lentils. And I was suddenly like, hey, it's not that difficult to make some lentils. Most of them didn't know what they were. A few of them, I think, said, oh yeah, you know, we have this in something at home, but it's not a traditional German food, that's for sure. Anyway, so I made some lentils. I didn't do anything really special with them. I don't think I found a recipe for them. I dumped some in the crock pot overnight with some tomato juice and a few bit of salt and a few other things. And I don't know, I might have even thrown a piece of chicken in it so I could eat it for my lunch after they all got their sample. It was new to most of them, but now they know what lentils are. They could not believe that anyone would have given. Okay, there were a few of them that thought they were really good, but the rest of them were like, Esau gave up his birthright for this. because most of them didn't know what they were, and because they haven't usually eaten them, they didn't think that they were very good. So it could have felt wasted, I suppose, because I brought them in and most of them didn't actually like them that well. But now they know what lentils are, and when the Bible talks about them, they know. And lentils also connected to what we were learning in history. So if the food can connect to another subject, that's even better. When I taught second grade, we did a reading book that was, I'm forgetting. It didn't go with my curriculum, but I think I had a book. I think I had a Becca's book, which is on the life of Jesus, second grade level. Now in Grenada, some of the foods that your students might be familiar with here, they were not familiar with. And I had to really stretch some of the foods that they had and get something that was almost a substitute in order to be able to find it. I think I finally gave up on getting olives there because I just couldn't get any without paying an arm for it. But I pushed in our tiny, tiny classroom. We got rid of the table and I pushed things back and put a blanket on the floor. We sat on the floor and we ate whatever I could find that seemed to connect to the life of Jesus and the foods that they had mentioned in there. We ate. And, you know, years later, those students still mentioned that. I'm sure they didn't remember anything else from that reading book. But both the activity of it and also the chance to taste some foods, different foods. I baked bread that was, I didn't know either how to come up with bread that was much like what they would have had back then, but at least I shaped it in more of a older, you know, just sort of round loaf instead of one that looked like it came out of a bread pan like we're used to now. And they thought that was the coolest thing to just be able to have that loaf of bread and sort of rip pieces off of it. And I mean, the vegetable stew I made was just kind of nothing special at all. And I'm not even sure they would have liked it, except they could dip all their bread in it the whole time. And anyway, so that made, you know, that was connections that they made later that went far beyond the little Bible stories that I taught them. From Bible class. Anyway, all that to say, you know, maybe these examples don't all line up exactly with what you're doing. Hopefully you have a couple that you can write down or remember that'll connect, and then the rest of them you can make on your own. But God's word does have many connections to all the other things that you're teaching. It's a matter of identifying them. And if you're like me, you don't have a lot of extra time to sit there and come up with all kinds of fancy ideas of what it could be. Obviously, if you do a meal on the floor with a bunch of stuff like that, that takes extra work. It's good to do some things like that occasionally, but we don't have time for that every day. But we can stop for just a couple seconds and point out something that came up to us. I would say that in order for that to happen, you are going to have to be in God's Word regularly and know it. And to be honest, I feel like some of the best way I've learned to know the Bible over the years is all the years that I've spent telling Bible stories to my students. I didn't always know them that well before I started either, but we picked up the Bible story book or the Bible curriculum that we had. And you know, I know I've done Old Testament a lot of my years of teaching, and I know those Old Testament stories well, not because of my own Bible study time, but because of the time I spend in class. So both of those things. Spend time, and then ask God to bring those connections to your mind at just the right time. The ones that they're ready to hear and the ones that are going to connect with them. And yeah, there will be times where suddenly what you read the night before or the week before is going to suddenly connect to what you have.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.